Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast, where we're here to talk DC Comics. I am Mark, and with me, we got my co-host Clay. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, man?
Nothing much, dude. Busy week as always for me. House hunting, family coming over. It's nuts, man. I'm stressed. You'll see. When you get your place, it's stressful, man. It sucks.
Dude, I get stressed out just because my wife is the kind of person, she's an HGTV kind of person, so she's always like, oh, I want to do this when we finally get our house and this.
And she watches like the Fixer Upper and stuff like that?
Yeah. So, well, for one, she went to school at Baylor, so she's
okay.
She's met the people from Fixer Upper and all that stuff.
Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Yeah.
Ow!
And she's like, oh,
how
yeah.
far are you from Waco?
I'm about 4 hours from Waco.
Okay.
So not too bad. But one thing for her is she met them, and then she always tells me all the time, she's like, yeah, I went to church with them. They're overrated, you know, blah, 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 blah. I was like, man, like, gotta just throw them out there like that? That's messed up. But the one thing that stresses me out the most is, you know, we'll have that spark of like, oh man, let's look into getting a house. And she's like, okay, what's the most expensive property we can find? And she'll look at the really, really high end stuff in here in town. She'll be like, I think we could do this. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I think that I will physically need to get a job while I'm sleeping.
Let me ask you this. If you are a man and you like HGTV, what are your thoughts on that?
See, for me, so I'll find myself, like, because usually we'll sit on the bed, she'll watch HGTV, I'll get my tablet, and I'll start reading books. And I'll usually have headphones listening to music, but then there'll be a pause in music, and I hear something, and I'll look up, and then I'll find myself putting down the tablet and just watching and watching. And I'm like, huh. And then she'll make a comment of like, that wallpaper just doesn't make any sense. I'm like, and then I'll make a comment and she'll look at me. I'm like, yeah, I'm watching. So what? Sue me.
the reason why I ask is because since my dad, when my dad was in baseball, you know, I am now in my house with my mom and my sister. So I'm just living with two females, and my mom loved HGTV and the Food Network. So I grew up on like Yank Can Cook and Wolfgang Puck, like cooking shows, Julia Childs.
Yeah.
Like that. So I'm a guy that goes to the gym, and if no one's there, I put on the Food Channel, the Food Network. I'm that guy. I can literally work out watching Guy Fieri on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dines.
See, we go to, there's a small Mexican restaurant, kind of just like hole-in-the-wall kind of place, and the only channel that they have it on is the Food Network. And so while we're eating, we'll watch these people just like cooking, and we're just like, oh, I wouldn't put that in that. You know, that just doesn't make sense. Or, you know, we're kind of critiquing they're the one with the show, but we're critiquing them. It's weird. I've never really thought of myself as somebody who would watch those channels. And then as I get older, I'm just like, it's not that bad.
No, this is me watching it since I was like 13. So, I mean, like my jam back in the day was like trading spaces.
Dude, I remember in my yearbook for sixth grade, there was twins in like the highest grade in that middle school. So I think it was sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. So eighth graders, there were twins. They actually had, they were on that show in my neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I probably saw that episode. So no, that's what I was just saying, because like I went to, when we went to Florida this, you know, when Jake, was helping out here doing the show with you, I saw one of the kids like from our youth group that my wife and I, we used to pastor. and she was watching Fixer Upper, the Chip and Joanna game show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. Like, what's the show about? And then I saw it. I completely forgot about her and that I was in her house. And I was there for 3 hours, and I saw three full episodes.
Oh, my
God. And I didn't realize it was nighttime. And it was just like, this show is awesome. So, yes, I am, I'm a sucker for those things. Like, if it's not like ESPN, because I have to know my audience, and people can't stand when I put baseball on because they think baseball is boring.
I don't know how people think that. I don't know how.
I think it's just like, if you don't understand the nuances of the sport, then it seems like it's, cause you know, baseball is slow. Okay. It's a slow sport, but there's a lot of nuances that go to it. And if you're just not kind of like aware of all the back behind the scene things that goes on, I think that, you know, it would be boring. Cause I mean, I consider soccer to be super boring, but then when it's the World Cup, I'm like ultimate bandwagon. And I don't know why I find it like the height of entertainment.
Yeah.
Like nothing can beat this.
You know, I always see baseball in two categories. Either the greatest damn sport ever or the most boring. There's no in between.
No, baseball's kind of like reading a Tom King comic book. You either love it or you're going to hate it, but there's no in between. It's like you're not on the fence with it.
That is true. Like, to be completely honest. But
yeah.
A nice segue to our first book.
No, you like that, right?
Yeah.
That's a professional right there.
First book we're going to be talking about is Batman 72 with an awesome Finch cover. It has been forever since I think the last time was technically like Detective 1000, but still. It's really nice to see him. I really like the Nick Darrington variant cover as well. There's a lot going on.
Is that Darrington?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. Well then, I think unless it's in the store, but I guess by the title credits, it showed somebody else's name. Unless that was a screw up.
Really?
On the titles, sure. it says like Michael Golden.
Darrington had.
It does look like Darrington because that kind of looks like the Batman stuff that you see in the Walmart copy issues.
Let me see. I'm going to see all of his Walmart stuff, by the way.
Yes.
Man, I think I goofed. I don't think it is Nick Darrington. I just thought there was a time where he actually, like, and he might have just been, like, saying cool art or something.
Maybe. Have been. Well, I mean, you never know. Sometimes these title thing cards, they give credit to somebody that wasn't even in the book as a goof. So it could have been, but at least from here, it does say Michael Golden.
All right, well, then I goofed. I'm sorry about that.
No, you're not forgiven. So, so this was quite a book. Now, it's one of those things that when you're reading this book, you're either going to love this direction or you're not, because in all, you don't really get much of, I guess you could say, forward movement in this book. Because this is all a really clever recap of pretty much Tom King's entire run. And I'll share kind of like at the end what bothered me the most about this comic book. Yes, I did on Twitter say that I did love the issue. And for the most part, I did. Why? Like, I'm not saying masterpiece or anything in that regards, but I think that this book was great. First, because it showcases George or Jorge, I don't know, I'm just going to say George. George Fornes's amazing art. I love his work. I don't think he draws a very terrifying Bane, but it feels more like human. I guess you definitely. Could say. You know, yeah, it feels more.
I always get a Batman 66 vibe from him, but in the coolest way. You know, not in a silly way, but in a really.
Yeah. I can see that because the Batman, even the cowl, kind of looks, even though it's black, it kind of looks like an Adam West vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be like his darker version of like a 66 spin. If so, awesome. But I really did enjoy it. But this was literally kind of what the entire story entailed. Now, for me, what I really enjoyed about it was kind of like with the recap, even though you kind of already knew it, but I guess because you're getting the entire recap all in one issue, there was kind of like this story that I'm like, wow, I think not too many people give Bane credit for being as smart as he really is. Yes, he did Nightfall, but I think he's mainly known for just being a roided out freak, but not really always getting, but that's more of a writer's problem. Not giving him the credit of being like a tactician at times. Yeah. And I love the fact that he, in a way, he did do something that, in a way, unless I probably have read it, but my memory sucks, and I just don't remember these things because, to me, it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, or it just hasn't happened. But I love the fact that in a book like this, where while you're getting this Batman and Bane fighting, awesome action sequences being spread out with these beautiful splash pages of what Mikael Janin was doing, which is gorgeous, you are seeing Bane attacking Batman in a different way, because when people come, all they really want to do is bring the pain. Yeah. I'm going to bring the Bane to the Batman. I will be the one to finally destroy him. But in this way, I found it clever because he went the opposite way, which was, let's make him happy. Let's make him fall in love. Let's give him something like that that he hasn't experienced, because he is that broken baby boy. And then once he feels like he finally has that in his grasp, let's rip it away from him. Like, try taking an ice cream from a baby at 2 years old. And it's like one of those things, just like, they're super happy, they're going to have their first lick, and you take it away from them. And I'm like, wow, that's really good, because there's nothing worse, even like as a sports fan. You know, it's like, you're watching a football game, you're really excited at the beginning, you're happy. Then your team is losing by 20, three touchdowns down, 21 points, and you're already depressed. There's nothing worse than while you've already accepted defeat, and now the team starts coming back, and they like tie the game, and now you're happy again, only for them to lose again. You know, you're like, damn, I just got my heart broken twice.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's something that Tom King has really brought to Batman. And I know some people are not big fans of it. I know others that are huge fans of it. But it's something that we've talked about plenty of times. It's just this grounded story that humanizes Batman to the very being of us. You know, it's the fact that he did fall in love, that he was being happy, that he was considering changing so many different things in his life to be with Catwoman. And it was all in the manipulation of Bane just to tear him down.
And that's actually what leads me to, like, it's not even a nitpick, because I was furious with this. When you see the reveal of who's the one narrating Bane's entire, like, he's like, I know what your plan was, kind of thing. And what's the reveal at the end? Yeah, it's Thomas Wayne. This ending felt so cool, but my immediate thought was, why the hell did they show him fighting a naked Bane? Like, those panels that you saw in that one issue, I don't remember what the number was, I'll say 67, just to throw it out there. Mm-hmm. But when you see Thomas and Bane sparring throughout, while you were getting, because that's the issue that it was the
dance.
Was that the Batman and Catwoman, like the nightmare sequence one?
I think it's 69. Yeah.
Okay, 69. So if that's the case, those Bane and Thomas panels were so pointless, when you could have had the Thomas Wayne with Alfred, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have the nightmare sequence. This would have been the perfect time to show him again. Because this looks terrifying. Because this right here shows, how might I help? This lets me know, whoa, like, he's also going to be playing a part. Instead of me already knowing that Thomas is there while he's completely in, like, a tank top and pajama pants, and he's fighting Bane. Like, I thought that
like, is true.
This,
if they would have
this kept, moment ruined it.
If they would have kept Thomas a secret until this point, I think that would have blown people away. I honestly do.
Yes.
My nitpick was with this as well, and it always has been, the involvement of Thomas Wayne. I know that in the sense Tom King is seeing it more as that Thomas doesn't want Bruce to be Batman, and that he hopes that Bane breaks him enough to want to give this life up. And I'm pretty sure that's the route that Tom King is wanting to go. And I feel like he was fighting Bane or sparring with him because basically he's like, okay, you're Batman, so if I fight you and I train with you, I'm going to know everything that Batman is going to try to do. That's how I saw it in my head. But
does it bother you? I know that this is not the same Earth, Thomas Wayne. But does it bother you that we're literally seeing Thomas Wayne and Jor-El in DC continuity?
I am. And I saw somebody question Bendis if this was going to be something that they meet eventually. And I don't think he answered directly. And then Tom King said that they would really like for that to happen. I don't want it to happen.
I don't, I know this is not Thomas Wayne, the one that we know. That Thomas Wayne and Martha, they did indeed die in Crime Alley.
Yeah.
But I feel that, I don't know, I don't know. It just kind of spoils things. Like, I don't know. Like, Thomas Wayne bothers me a little less than seeing Jor-El, but that could just be that I'm more of a Superman fan, so seeing Jor-El just bothers me because I feel like that kind of, you know, changes everything in the mythology. But then, like, the other thing in me is, do you believe that Thomas Wayne is going to be also doing, like, a twist on Bane? Like, do you think there's going to be a heel turn where he's becoming a good guy, which is going to spread to him possibly being the Batman
I think there's going to be a point in Bane's plan that he hasn't told Thomas where eventually, like, right before Bane does it, Thomas will, like, realize it, and he'll do the heroic thing. I think that's what's going to happen. Because I really think that Bruce and Thomas both had a very big heart-to-heart way back in issues 23 and 24 of The Button. And so I think that, you know, Thomas really does care for his son and that he wouldn't want Bane to legitimately kill him. And I think just because he is also Batman, he's like, okay, Batman can take this. You know, this whole beating throughout the Wayne Mansion or whatever, this is nothing. So I'm enjoying the take that Tom King is having with Thomas Wayne. I just think that I agree with you in the sense that if Thomas Wayne wasn't a big deal from before Nightmares, or even in 50, when we saw him at the very last panel, if everybody was there and then we just see him, this is the first time we see him, that would have been crazy. And I think because of that, you have now made me not enjoy this. Way to go.
No, I mean, no, it's, again, like, I still enjoy the issue. Even, I mean, again, I don't mind if I'm reading a comic and it doesn't push forward. It sometimes it bothers a little bit more. Like, I guess it can irk me a little bit if I knew, considering now I know that Tom's run is ending in 13 issues. So it's kind of like, dude, pick it up. Like, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But if I knew that he was having this long story, I don't mind having one issue where nothing really happens as long as it's done cleverly. And it's done well. Yeah. Which is... But my biggest thing is... I remember in the show that when we talked, I was like, man, what a weird way to show Thomas Wayne after the big reveal that he was in the cave with Alfred. Like, he's literally sparring with a knee. Like, it just felt weird. Like, show me... Let me see his appearance again. Badass. This was badass.
Yeah.
But it's like, this means nothing. I already know you're helping. You're working with freaking Bane. That's already been revealed, so I don't understand what was the point of this. So it kind of feels like...
That last panel of how may I help you kind of has no merit to it.
Because, exactly.
Because we know that he's already helping.
So yes.
I completely understand that.
Yeah. So maybe if they just had a different dialogue, okay, cool. Then, you know, I don't know. I'm not clever enough to think of something. Let's get him, damn it. I don't know. But that's the, that's a little conundrum. But again, it's not overall. I still liked it. I mean, I read it, like, I was really excited to read the comic, and I was reading it. I was like, man, this is true, because it's kind of nice knowing, like, even though Tom King's run has had, you know, continuity inconsistencies throughout, again, it's, and I think that it could be, I don't think it's a fact of not caring. I just think it's when you're doing books every other week, I think it's like you don't have the time to kind of remember and retrace every single thing that's been done.
Yeah.
Because it's very time crunchy, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that I don't really mind that stuff, but it was just something like that. I was like, oh God, it was, but anyways, we're going to continue here with Batman. But this is going to be, Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is issue number 2 of 6 by James Tynion, Freddie Williams, the second, Clay, we were kind of discussing this book earlier because, you know, I think we were really big fans of the first issue. We loved the whole Anti-Monitor reveal, the Crisis in a Half Shell. I think we felt, I know I definitely fell in love with that title, but I kind of felt a little underwhelmed with this comic. And this is something just to give context, because I know that this has been really popular. I know a lot of people have been that enjoyed like the movie. This is my thing as a reader. Whenever I know that there's event books that are out, like right now we currently have, like, even though Deceased is not continuity, I'm all for what Deceased is all about.
Oh man, I can't wait to talk about it, man.
Yes. So yeah. We have like Deceased. We have Doomsday Clock. We just finished up with Heroes in Crisis. So when you have big books like that, I kind of like only care about, in reality, like those really big books. Like that and some of the characters that really, really I enjoy. When there's like other smaller books, I tend to, for some reason, the way I'm wired, I just tend to not care about them. And they become books that I only want to read, like trade read. Let me read it in a trade and I'll read it all in one sitting.
Yeah. Yeah, so, for sure.
So it's not like, yes, I read it, but it was more like I had to force myself to read it. And that's more because of content purposes for the show, but not because it's like I was excited and I wanted to read it.
Yeah, it was definitely, and like I said, it was definitely a book that I was wanting to read, but wasn't like a very large necessity for me. And I literally read it this morning, unfortunately. But it's still great content. I'm not gonna harp on like the writing quality or the art, you know, both of it, writing and art is very, very good. We basically start exactly where we left off with this Gen 1 Raphael explaining to this TMNT Batman hybrid team that they are not who they are supposed to be. And this original Raphael is giving a history lesson, but before he gives the history lesson, he actually fights the entire team, Michelangelo, Donnie, Ralph, Leo, and Batman, and he is able to beat all of the other turtles. It doesn't show that he beats Batman, which I'm really, I thought that was kind of funny, that mm-hmm. I don't think they wanted to show Batman getting beat up by a turtle, but then this Gen 1, he calls himself like the first generation or the first in the multiverse of the TMNT.
He's like, you're looking at the original package Raphael number one.
Yeah. And he shares the history of him and his universe and how at one point they're turned red skies, which we all know represents the crisis, and in the midst of that, all of his brothers were captured by this Krang Anti-Monitor that explained the multiverse to them, and in the midst of that, he was saying that he wanted to grab one multiverse and another multiverse and collide them together to make an even larger multiverse, and we see the original Batman here, which I thought was kind of cool. I don't know if this is how, because if you look at Batman, the way he's drawn, stuck to this tower compared to the Batman that is in the, I guess, real world, because this is just a flashback. Their cowls are a different size as far as the ears. The regular Batman kind of looks a little bit more muscular. So I wasn't a huge fan of how they drew him here, but I don't know how they drew him in Batman TMNT number 1 and 2. So,
all the books were done by Freddie Williams, but I would say, with Freddie Williams, I don't know. I also did see a lot of inconsistencies with his art, and mainly it was Batman, because there were moments with Batman. I think when he was confronting like the anti-monitor, well, Krang, and he kind of mentioned like, "I will stop you." When you're seeing Batman there, I don't know if you're familiar with like Howard Chaykin.
Yes.
But I'm like, man, this looks like Howard Chaykin. Like, I was like, what? Like, Batman, I feel like I've seen him like three or four different ways in this book. And again, like, you know, there's a lot of detail. I think that, I don't know. I know it says with Kevin Eastman, but for some reason, some of the stuff that, you know, with the OG Ninja Turtles, it looks like Eastman, but then some of it looks like if it was Williams trying to do Eastman.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. It was like all over the place, but like, you know, there were a lot of really, really beautiful images, and it's mainly when the anti-monitor was kind of like involved, especially with the Red Sky. Like, there's a lot of detail. There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, it kind of, in my head, I was always focusing on the way Batman just looked different in single panel.
Like, there's a panel where Batman is like running and he's like smiling, like as if he's like running out of the panel.
Oh yeah, he's like smirking. Yes.
And I'm just like, that's not Batman. I'm sorry. It just,
well, it is from Justice League.
It took me, man. Well,
I'm sorry. That freaking movie. I won't get over it. Go ahead.
It took me out of the book at that one spot, but I was like, okay, let's just finish this book up. Let's see how it ends. And it's basically just Ralph explaining how he basically got there. And you end up seeing the Laughing Man, who we all know is Shredder and Joker. He is confronted by Krang. And we have Crisis in a Half Shell Part 2. That's the end. Like I said, I had fun with the book. There was some inconsistencies. There was that small nitpick of the original Batman as far as art goes. But overall, I like this book. I like the colors on this book. I like if they go a little bit more into the multiverse of TMNT, because we all know about the multiverse of DC. If they, you know, bring in another generation, like futuristic generation of the TMNT in here, I think that would be kind of cool. But we'll see how this goes. I don't know where they're really trying to go with this. But it's just supposed to be a fun book with this. So the movie just came out yesterday. And is available on the DC Universe app as of yesterday. I'm probably gonna watch it today. So
did you watch Swamp Thing?
Oh my gosh, Swamp Thing!
Yeah, I'm
a guy who doesn't like scary stuff, and so I woke up super early. Sun hadn't even completely risen yet. I had my headphones in. I was in bed. There was loud, scary music, jump scares. I wasn't a happy camper for that, but it was a quality show, and I'm still going to continue to watch it.
Yeah, I really liked it. I mean, it shows a little bit of a, I don't know, I think like the older I've gotten, I'm like completely over anything that resembles network TV. So if it just doesn't show like bigger, like I guess I've gotten to the point where I kind of want like movie style TV shows.
Yeah.
Like that kind of. So maybe it's because of HBO, the, like me watching the shows that I watch like on Showtime, like I love Homeland, like those kind of shows.
Yeah.
I think because I've gotten that, once you get to something on CBS, NBC, I'm just like, nah, this is, I can't watch this anymore. Like I'm tired of it. But when I saw Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing got me. Well, first of all, I love Swamp Thing. So I saw the show and I was like, oh wow, this, I can see why they probably had to cut it, cut the show short because of the production budget, because it looked really, really, really good. And I mean, I think that between Alec and Abby, I think they chose like two good headlining characters. Like I bought them into like why you can kind of see how their chemistry started. So I don't know, man. I liked it. I thought it was a good pilot. And you know, pilots rarely tell you what the show's going to be like.
Yeah, and I knew it was going to happen this way. Minor spoilers, minor, very minor. The actual Swamp Thing character isn't really developed until the very ending of the show, and so I knew that was going to be the way to go, just because it's the very beginning of the show. We still have another 12 to.
It's nine more. It's 10 episodes the season.
Oh, that's right. So we have nine.
Yeah,
more
episodes, it was supposed to be 13, but they cut it to 10.
That's right. That's right. So we have nine more episodes. I feel like there's still going to be quality, good episodes. I immediately started to get excited when Xanadu was introduced, because recently, as recent as Hawkman, know who Xanadu is, and so that got me excited. So really, really cool, and I'm hoping to, because what's today? Today's Wednesday, of course. So two more days until episode two. I'm excited.
Happy new comic book day to all our comic book fans, even though you're going to listen to this on Thursday.
And I'm going to say this. This will be the first time I go to the comic shop in, like, how many episodes is this?
This is 12.
12? Man, in 3 months. The first time in 3 months.
Hey, well, you've lived up to your promise to your wife that you were going to be cutting back on comics. Or it's just because you finally saved money after you bought every single Detective Comics 1000 cover known to man.
I know.
I'm pretty sure. I think you bought covers that were make-believe. Like, just fan art covers. Because I think you covered your entire, like, queen-size bed in variant covers.
Almost. I almost did. And it's really cool because, like, on my bookshelf, I haven't put Detective Comics in my actual comic boxes yet. So it takes a good 25% of one shelf on my bookshelf.
Did you do the same thing for Action?
I did not, unfortunately. But they're technically still for sale in some places. There's only some specific covers that I want, though. I still want the Gleason cover. And I want... There was another one out there. The one that I absolutely wanted that was from a different retailer, I already got. Tyler Kirkham from Unknown Comics did a variant where it had, like, Superman was kind of, like, covering and, like, protecting Lois and Supergirl. And Doomsday was, like, in the background, like, overshadowing them. Really, really cool art. So I had to get that one. I know that there was a...
Oh, I see it. I see it.
Yeah. There was, of course, the Nicola Scott one, which I got, like, probably was one of the first ones I wanted to get. Shipping was crazy
because
it's from Australia. But
yeah, the first two that I bought, like, no, three actually, that I got that I made sure I wanted in my hands was the Francisco Martina, the Gleason with, like, the American flag at the back.
Yes.
On the background.
That's the one I want.
And the Jason Fabok.
Oh, that was the...
With the white dove.
Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't that one on eBay? Do you remember?
I bought it from eBay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was, the way he announced it was like, hey, there's only going to be so much, and I'm putting it on eBay. They're like, buy immediately sales or whatever. So I don't think that one's in print anymore. So,
oh, yeah. So I purposely bought that one. And then the regular cover, like the Action comic, the Jim Lee one.
Yeah.
That is like my baseball card.
Oh, so that's besides, the one you have, like, all those people sign?
Yeah, I just need Bendis and Johns.
Nice.
So, but to do that, I feel like I need to go to Cali.
For Johns, yeah, probably.
Yeah, like, I was lucky enough that Jim Lee was at MegaCon last year, and I met him. But, yeah, Bendis and Johns, yeah, probably. But anyways, that was a nice little break from comics, because that's because we're getting into the nitty-gritty.
Yes. Really nitty-gritty. And let me just say, the two books that we're going to be talking about next, this one that we're talking about now, almost made me cry at the very
end. He said dad, man! He said dad!
I know. But so, so good. Talking about Deceased number 2, the freaking... Let's see if I can even zoom in big credits page. But I know that it is, of course, Tom Taylor.
Yeah, we got Tom Taylor. Trevor Hairsign is on the penciler. Stefano Guadiano is the inker. Rain Barreto is the colorist. And Saida Temofonte is the letterer. And then you have Lionel Yu and Tomo Murray are the cover artists. And I mean, I get every cover. So I got the Murray. I got the Francisco Matina, like the zombified
Superman,
and then the horror movie one from
the Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, the Yasmin Putri.
Yeah.
So,
I love Yasmin's art, dude. So good.
Yeah. Well, for sure, me too. So, dude, yeah, Deceased number 2. This one was really good. I love the fact, because I really wanted to know, where is Aquaman going to play a role? And I believe this will help some of the, because it's kind of funny, because doesn't it feel like Aquaman are starting to get like Wally West like fans? Or for some reason, are we just following them, where now if you see Aquaman just being in the background, it's automatically like Aquaman gets no respect?
Yeah.
Or maybe you're just not following them. Or someone that I'm following retweets them, but I'm like, who is this person? I'm like, we're basing it on one panel from one book. Let them freaking tell the story. But yeah. Here they'll finally get their Aquaman. And I gotta say, it was really cool, because I love the fact of seeing like Aquaman, you know, he's on the ship wanting to know. And I really got, I have to say, like, Trevor Hairsign, the way that he draws like the gore with all the scratches, and like you can actually see the meat from the skin. It's like the blood. It's actually it makes you kind of wheezy. Like if you're like really looking at it in detail, but it's beautifully done, and you see Arthur's in the pickle. Like this is really, really bad. And you see, once he opens that door, there's no way that he's going to have time to close it, but you see him kind of getting like knocked overboard. But which kind of scares me is that I feel like I know what's coming, which is we're going to see like a zombified anti-life. I don't even know what you want to call him. The equated Atlantis, where there's going to be, because when I see all the dead going in, and you kind of see on the bottom, and there's even the word that when you see him falling in, it even says like how deep.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel like that, and even like the blood, because now we kind of know, because it answers a question, well, later on, in regards to Batman's fate. Is this just something that it's technological, or if you get bit or if you get scratched, will you get infected? So seeing all that blood in the water kind of makes me feel like that's going to infect a lot of sea life.
See, and the thing is, when you see him fall, you have no like real evidence of if he got scratched or not, if he got infected.
Yeah,
you know, because let's play the optimist here. As soon as Aquaman gets in water, he can swim at incredible speeds. So, mm-hmm. Would he be the kind of person to just swim away really fast? Or would he be the kind of person to fight, you know? So,
yeah.
So it kind of leaves that mystery. And, but because of the words, how deep, I think it is a little bit of foreshadowing to witness a zombified, Atlantis for sure.
Cause all it takes is like one shark to go and smell the blood, eat one of them, and then that's it, you know?
Yep.
So it really plays that kind of picture that I'm really curious to see what's going to happen. In the meantime, we are now looking at the aftermath, and you're seeing how from Superman being able to save Jonathan and Damian and Lois from, you know, getting to the looking at their phones, and they're seeing everything that's going on. You kind of see Damian like Jonathan's just being a good friend, just saying, hey, it's going to be okay. He's like, I'm not worried, which he said, dad, to later on seeing kind of like what's going on with Harley and Poison Ivy. I thought this was real nice. It's kind of, if you are fans of, you know, these two being kind of like a couple, mm-hmm. or whatever it is, like, you know, as close as they are. I thought that this moment, I was really curious to see what was going to happen in this issue. Like, why is Harley talking to Poison this way? And why is Poison saying, like, this is something that you got to do on your own? Well, then you kind of see why. And it looks like it's one of those moments where Harley's going to break the news to Joker that they're separating.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and she's finally getting that courage.
We've seen this in other reiterations of main continuity and other...
It felt like Gotham City Sirens.
Yeah. And we've seen it, I believe... in Injustice as well, another yes. Tom King. Oh man, I did it. I said,
"Oh,
Tom
you
King.
Did the Tom King." Oh.
Oh no, I'm sorry, Tom Taylor. I'm so sorry.
Timestamp 42 minutes.
But
Trevor Hairston draws a sick Joker.
Oh my gosh, I was just about to say the way Joker looks. You think that he's methodical and insane before, like. This just adds to it, man. With all the scratches on his face, the blood that's dripping down, it looks amazing. I love all of this that's going on with Hairsign's art. We also see the next scene is quite possibly the saddest, coolest, unsuspecting thing to happen in a Tom Taylor book.
Yes, because it's one of those things, like, when you read this part that you're going to talk about now, it's kind of like, I have no idea. Well, I guess it depends, like, where your loyalties are with characters. But these are one that it can be either, yeah, like what you're saying. Because, like, for me, I was like, oh, why do you have to go? But then I'm like, oh, this is, like, it kind of, like, it was bummed because you see what happens in the tent. But then it was kind of like the payoff was like, oh, snap, all right, this is badass.
Yeah. Exactly. So, Green Arrow, Canary, and Hal Jordan are all camping. We find out that Hal Jordan does not like camping whatsoever. But Black Canary and, Dinah and Oliver, they want to get away from everything. They just fought Darkseid. They saved the world again. And they're saying, you know, we heroes need that time away to, bring ourselves back up. Sanctuary. So what ends up happening is Hal gets inside of the tent and immediately gets on his phone, and they, like, he starts to roar or whatever, and they pull out their weapons, or at least Green Arrow does, but I think it was more of like a joke, because he does start to play it like a guitar. And Canary starts to sing, but it's very convenient that he has his bow and arrow handy, because Green Lantern comes out, not Hal. You know, he goes fully formed, and he starts attacking everybody because the anti-life equation has taken him over. They do get in a fight. Dinah gets hurt, and the only way to save Ollie is Canary uses her cry. To a point to where Hal Jordan is dead. But before that, I
actually really like that when you do see him become like the zombified Green Lantern. I love the fact that you're seeing kind of like the desperation from the ring saying like lethal force is not sanctioned.
Yeah.
For some reason, it just felt like it was kind of like a plea. From the ring, even though, yes, you normally see it, but I guess because of the context, I'm kind of like accepting the rings to have kind of like personality, like Jessica Cruz's ring.
That's what I was just about to say. So if anybody has been reading Green Lantern, from all the way to Rebirth to even Grant Morrison's run, we have learned that the rings have somewhat of a soul. It's a almost symbiotic relationship between the user and the ring. And so this ring actually does say, you know, hey, lethal, the ring realizes that he is about to use lethal force, and he says, no, lethal force is not, and that's when he starts attacking. So this anti-life equation is even stronger than pure will itself, which is crazy.
Yeah.
We do see Superman, Clark, Superman, John, Damian, and Lois go to the Daily Planet to find some answers, to get to, like, old radio broadcasting. But Clark looks inside the planet and notices that there are a lot of people that are infected. And Lois even says, like, is it people we know? And he says, yes.
And it's going to be a bummer because you know that you're going to end up seeing at one point or another Perry and Jimmy.
And Jimmy. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Maybe Cat Grant, but I don't know how much comic fans care about Cat Grant.
Yeah.
I think, like, maybe if you're really deep in the Superman stuff, you can appreciate Cat Grant. But if not, I feel like you'll definitely get those two.
Yeah, but at this point, Superman hears the canary cry. He flies all the way over there. And right before he gets there, the ring says that, you know, Hal Jordan has died, scanning for replacement, and it goes straight to Black Canary.
Oh,
this redesign, I was talking to my friend from work. Everybody online knows him as Juice Wayne from YouTube. He wants this to be continuity. Like, he not deceased as a whole, but he wants Green Lantern Dinah to be continuity.
It was nice.
This redesign, like I said, was phenomenal. I absolutely love her design, especially with the jacket and everything. And she doesn't want it. She immediately, like, says, "Hey, I don't want this." And Superman is there.
Well, especially the cost that it took. Like, oh, there was, yeah, the price was Hal's death. Like, that, they're like best buds.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of, that's like a heavy cross to bear, you know?
And, like, it felt a little weird. Superman didn't question anything. He just said, hey, take it. We're going to need it.
Because I think because of this situation and everything that's going on, I don't think, like, you don't have time to think like that.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, if you kind of know in a way that he's flying towards that direction, I would like to think that Superman was probably hearing and knew of the situation and kind of has an idea of what was going on.
Yeah.
At least that's what I'm guessing. But then, I mean, that's where the story leads to probably one of the more tear-jerking moments, which is Clark, Jonathan, Damian, Lois, Dinah, and Oliver, they get radioed in, and it is Bruce. And Bruce is letting them know they're not zombies. They're not consumed by hunger. They're spreading death. And they're stealing life. Like, these are like the anti-living, which kind of just gives you, you know, and their triggers like an equation. And he kind of mentions he's like being infected, and that's when he kind of reveals that he's actually right now in Mr. Freeze's, and one of Mr. Freeze's outfits. And he's doing that to freeze himself to kind of slow down his metabolism as much as he can to kind of slow down the virus that's spreading within him. But he knows that it's going to take over. These were one of those moments that, in a way, it's like I love and I hate about Batman. Where it's sometimes, I guess, you kind of just want that little droopy, sad moments where you're seeing, like, Clark really sad and he's like, Bruce. But it's like Batman knows. He's like, dude, we don't have time for this.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's literally no, he says it, like, there's literally no time for this kind of sentiment, Clark. And he's like, I need to say everything I can now before it's too late. But sometimes you kind of just want to know what he feels. Like, what would he say to Superman if he was dying? Mm-hmm. You know? But then that's when you get the moment where he's speaking with Damian. And, but it's one of those things, like, he's like, Alfred has something for you. It's something I always wanted for you. I'm kind of assuming that it's probably like him to be Batman.
Yes, and
that's how I took it.
Something that I have that Juice actually brought to my attention. Every single time we have seen Damian as Batman in the future, it's always in a post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah, I mean, that was like Batman 666, right? Grant Morrison?
Yeah,
Batman. That was kind of like the first reveal with him, like with the trench coat.
Batman 666. There was also a book last year, The Nuclear Winter, that showed Damian as Batman as well in a post-apocalyptic world. So, and now we have a third one, if he actually wears the suit.
Yeah, so that was that. That's pretty much how I took it. But it was the thing where when he says dad, because he, you know, he has said a lot of times father.
Yeah.
And father, but fathers has always felt like robotic.
Very robotic. Because sometimes very
the same time, because some of the times that you hear him speak when he's talking to, he's like, "No, my father has me prepared. That my father would not." So father meant really nothing to me. But it's kind of like when he said dad, that's Damian completely open.
Yeah,
he's and knowing that down he's walls. Literally yeah. Yes. And that's when, right when he said it, it was done, and that's when Batman absolutely crushed the helmet. Like, this is now him full raged. And to be honest, I don't believe that Alfred got him. Because, honestly, I just can't see this not having Batman in it.
Oh, no, don't say that, Mark. Why? No.
Well, no, the reason why is I feel that I can kind of see where Alfred's going to get taken out by Bruce. And I think it's going to be something where, let's just say, Juice's thought, which, I mean, I thought too, because Batman 666, that's kind of like, you know, where, at least where my head thought of in story-wise, I can kind of see where if you see, like, a Damian be the one to take him out and now Ooh. Kind of, like, take charge, like, this is now his world. And that's kind of, like, it. With everything.
Okay, I can see it like that. I thought you meant, like, Batman is not going to die in this story. I'm like,
No, he'll die in the story. I don't think that he died by this gunshot.
I can see that.
Yeah. No, my bad. My bad if I didn't explain that. But when, yeah, that's what I thought. And I think it's going to be even worse because you're going to see Alfred, and you know Alfred's going to die, and he's going to say the most heart-wrenching thing to his son, even though his son is a rabid animal right now. So it's like one of those things that I feel that every issue of Deceased is going to be like the Game of Thrones equivalent of like the Red Wedding when it was just brutal and you're just like, oh God, no! Like that's what, I feel like that's how I'm going to feel reading these. What is it, six issues?
Yeah, it's six issues. I just wanted to make two comments on Green Arrow. This is why I love Green Arrow so much.
Welcome to the Killjoy Corps.
he came up with the whole, I always suspected we'd have to destroy the internet to save the world comment. Absolutely love it. Tom Taylor uses Green Arrow and his comedic relief so good. And like even here, you know, one thing that me and Juice have always talked about when it comes to Batman is Batman goes out on his own terms in almost every story that we have seen Batman. You know, Batman is the kind of character to selfishly and selflessly at the same time try to sacrifice himself to save the team, the world, and that's why Green Arrow also made the comment, you're going to sacrifice yourself for the galaxy, outwitting an evil as old as the stars. You know, because that's how the Justice League and that's how the DC Universe sees Batman. As somebody who is always willing to step up and sacrifice himself. So I really like that Tom Taylor acknowledges that's who Batman really is. And so I really like that point of dialogue as well. I really love this this bottom panel where right after he breaks the helmet, Batman, where he's kind of like crouching down and stuff. Awesome looking art. I don't know if this will ever be art that is for sale, but I would definitely buy that. Or at least a print of it.
Yeah, it kind of looks like what I'm looking at, it kind of reminds me of, with Grant Morrison, like the Batman, not colors, but like the like that pose. It reminds me of like, are you familiar with like the Batman Zur-En Arr?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for some reason, I don't know why, but that pose kind of reminds me, because I felt like I read that somewhere, like in the RIP stuff. But yeah, this was a great issue, and well, talking about that, just because my iPad alerted me, so if Kevin happens to be hearing this before he reads anything on sports, I just got notification that it looks like the Cubs are going to sign, or at least they're eyeing, Craig Kimbrell. So if there's any baseball fans, I'm a huge baseball fan. So everybody wants to know where Craig Kimbrell or Dallas Keuchel are going to go. So maybe the Cubs. Huh. So, yeah, that was weird. I don't know why I said that. But
this next book, though, literally brought me to tears.
Did you really? No, I'm not saying that you didn't. But sometimes, because like I feel like I've done it on like maybe twice in all my times reading comics. One of them was actually, believe it or not, the button when Batman and Bruce.
Nice.
I mean, Batman and Thomas, Bruce and Thomas. Like that one, I was like, man, this is like really like sad stuff. But I gotta be honest, this one did it to me too.
This one didn't. So there's two parts where you really get the feels in two different extreme ways. You have the first part where it's still very sad with Superman, and then at the very end, which we will talk about. Well, not the very end, because this is with this anniversary issue 25. It's a little bit larger. It's about 40 pages. But there's a first part and a second part, and you definitely see the differences.
Which James Tynion is in charge of the second part.
Yeah. So the end of the first part is like literally, and you can message Juice if you want to. I got really pumped. I kind of like, woo! And like he like looked at me and he was like, what's going on? I wiped away a tear from the corner of my eye, and a coworker of ours that isn't a nerd whatsoever. She likes Wonder Woman, but she's not into comics too crazy like we are. She even asked, she's like, are you crying? And I was like, yeah, I am, and I'm completely okay with it. But we will get to that point when okay. we get there. But we open up with another scene from when Clark was younger.
This is actually what started me to get emotional.
Yes.
Just when I saw Pa.
Yes. For me, I've realized that the best thing to happen to Clark is being a father. There was a point in, I believe, Superman Rebirth, and I have the picture somewhere. I saved the panel, where John and Clark are talking on a rooftop, and like almost word for word, Clark says some things to John that Pa Kent had said to him, and it, that right there was like, oh man, this is so amazing. And so to see this and to see that, like, even though he sees like basically his worst nightmares and all hope is lost, we jump to the Justice League fighting the Sixth Dimension Justice League and Batman in this final bat suit or whatever, mm-hmm. or the last bat suit or whatever it's called. The World Forger is wanting to break the universe, the main universe or whatever, so that way they can forge a new one and all this, you know, their original plan. But Batman is pleading to him, hey, let me just talk to these guys. Let me talk some sense into them. They'll agree.
Yeah, one last plea.
Yeah. And so he agrees, you know, but if you don't do this, I will do it myself kind of thing.
Did you feel that when he said that, like, give me one more chance, did you feel like this is when you're going to get the Bruce? Like, did you ever have any doubt that Batman was actually going to betray his friends?
Like, this is how good Snyder is as far as storytelling. It's very stereotypical for, you know, the old trick ya, you know, I'm gonna team up with you, but only to really, you know, play to your downfall kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And because it was so stereotypical, I honestly thought Snyder was not gonna go that.
No, for a moment, because of it being in the Sixth Dimension, I was kind of thinking that we were going to see Bruce do something that he hasn't done before, you know, that we haven't seen. at least something that we feel like would have continuity consequences. But once I read Let Me Speak With Them One More Time, then I automatically thought that he already had a trick up his sleeve.
Yeah.
And this was that it was that's kind of like when it ruined it. Now, once we got, you know, with them still fighting and he's getting it, and this was his kind of, you know, his plan all along to create the light, which were these mini suns.
Yeah.
And that's when you, I mean, cause it was really sad to see, and it was a credit to George Jimenez and how great his art is, where seeing Superman the way that he started to look, especially, you know, when in the panels where it's a little further away, and you can kind of see where he looks like a Dr. Seuss character.
Yes.
Like his toes are starting to look, like his feet are starting to look longer. It's, everything's a little more elongated. It kind of started again, like, oh man, like look at his bony body, his eye bags. Like it's just, it was really sad. And him literally looking at from what Bruce did to like envisioning seeing his son dying like hundreds of times and Lois holding his death. Like, I was like, man, this is, like, really, really sad stuff. So then when you're seeing the little lights in this dark void and you're like, oh, wow, is he, like, creating mini suns? I have to be honest, this was one of the greatest panels I have ever seen, which was the darkness. And you're seeing it's, like, this four-page mini panel where he realizes that it's suns. And you're seeing from this dark void to his eyes getting big, to him actually getting color, then to his face having purpose, and you see him face towards the sun. One of my favorite things as a Superman fan is when I can see the potential of what Superman can be when he sun dips.
Yes.
Because you don't really see him sun dip. You see him, oh, I need the sun, and it's just sunlight. But you never see the sun dipping.
Yeah.
So when I see the sun dipping, that was
right before then, when you see, you know, Bruce is pleading, you know, you need to see it now. And you see Clark see like very blurred out dots, and he's starting to realize that they're lights. And he remembers that day when John couldn't pull the lantern out because of the rain. I will admit, this is where I started to get choked up.
Oh, for sure.
When you see the entire league come out, John Stewart has a giant umbrella keeping the lanterns alive. Like, this is where I started to lose it. He shot into the sun. I started to get more excited. And like you said, whenever you see him glow, like literally glowing from the sun, like, he has so much radiation of the yellow sunlight, he is almost exuberant, and then realizes, oh, I need more. And he hits, like, every single sun. And, like, I'm starting to get even more and more excited. The World Forger is starting to see, like, starting to feel the quakes of him hitting every single sun.
And then Lois sees Clark.
Yes. Oh my gosh, she sees the determination. She sees, like, this is where the point comes around. Superman is the literal embodiment of hope.
Mm-hmm.
Lois sees the S and is immediately turned and says, you know what, do it. You need to do it now.
Yeah. Ugh.
And right here, when you, this was the picture that Snyder put out like almost a month ago, where it shows Pa Kent, his fist, then John's fist, and then you see, I don't know if anybody out there is a fan of Dragon Ball Z, you basically see the father-son Kamehameha. This is it, this right here, the picture of Pa Kent, Superman, and John, and the, like, I'm already tearing up, I'm choking up right now. The joy on both Pa Kent and John's face, and the determination on Clark's face. Oh my gosh.
Dude, this panel is so gorgeous. I need this print. George! I need this print.
I will literally, you know, I may ask him now. I may ask him after today, after this recording, if there is any possible way I could buy this from him, whether it be a print, whether it be the original art, anything. I need this today. I need some reiteration of this. This will quite possibly be my my phone save, my screensaver from here until the day I die. Oh my gosh, I'm literally like just choked up, tearing up right now. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful scene. And when he punches the World Forger, he literally breaks the Styx dimension.
Oh, so good. It's so good.
Literally. People say that they have such a hard time. I hear people say all the time that there is no way, no easy way to write Superman. Snyder makes it look so freaking easy.
Oh, no, no. 100%.
We haven't had a solo Superman series from Snyder since
Unchained.
I want another. I want another.
I mean, I think Unchained was a great story. I thought Unchained was really good. I necessarily wouldn't have chosen Jim Lee to be the artist, but I would say that I actually really, really, really enjoyed Unchained, and no, I thought it was a great story.
If there is another miniseries, I think Jimenez needs to be his artist on it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. I absolutely 100% believe that Jimenez is now officially my favorite Superman artist.
And you know what? And kudos to Jimmy, because Jimmy's been saying this for a while. And I think, I want to say, I know it's Ivy. Like, he's like a Rick Grayson fan on Twitter. He actually has like the George Jimenez Superman tattooed on his arm.
Yeah. I've seen that also. But I will say that, who's the colorist? Alejandro
Sanchez.
Yes. Beautiful. Him and Jimenez are a great dynamic duo. This, like, these panels here where it shows that the sixth dimension is shattering, like, that is a great panel as well. A great page. I love the shading and everything that he does when Superman is like, it's like the first person view of the Forger looking up at Superman, and all you see is a silhouette with the S.
Mm-hmm.
That also, beautiful panel. I could gush over this thing for days.
I'm looking at like every detail right now as we speak, because I really it's one of those things that I was reading it and I kind of just wanted to know what was coming up next. And honestly, after this moment, and I thought that there was a nice moment with World Forger where he actually joins the team and he kind of realizes that, you know, we can do this together and, you know, with you on our side. And I don't know why, but I kind of became like where I'm like, dude, I would be so down for having World Forger be part of the Justice League.
I think it's really cool, to be completely honest. He is like basically a god. So I think that's really cool to have somebody like that on the good side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But that brings us straight into the James Tynion side.
I want you to know that I just beat you to the punch.
Did you ask him?
Yeah, because I was planning to anyways, but I forgot to. So you kind of just sparked that in me. So if anything, well, I mean, if he does have them for sale, then, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's just not one.
Okay, well, let me know, because I am being dead serious.
I gotcha. I'll let you know. And if anybody else wants to know, then after me and Clay get them, then I'll let you know.
But this story called The Message is written by James Tynion. Artist is actually going to be the new ongoing artist for Justice League after this issue. Jimenez is no longer going to be on the Justice League book, from what I know.
Well, it's probably, I think they are doing it by story arcs, because when you didn't have Jimenez, it was Jim Chung.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So yeah. So I think it's just there. I think it's alternating arcs.
Okay. So this, arc that's coming up after 25, so 26 through whatever, is going to be Javier Fernandez. Mm-hmm. A lot of people might know him if y'all are, Boom Studios fans. He was on Power Rangers for a little bit. But this is basically showing everything that happened while they were away. They thought they were away for a couple hours. Mira reveals to them that they have been gone for a week. Is that it?
I believe so.
It says here.
Because I remember she mentioned that it was... Yeah, it's been a week since you left.
Yeah, okay.
So and that's what she kind of mentions about Lex, like, saving the world.
Yeah, and Lex Luthor used Batmite to basically, you know, fake being the hero. Had made a giant broadcast when everybody, when, like, all these news cameras and everything were in front of the Legion of Doom. They basically said, which, I'm going to have to say it, the DC Universe, like, Earth humans have basically got to be the dumbest people ever. I'm sorry.
To still live in these places?
Well, no, not just to live in these places, but they're like, you see a known villain that is literally calling himself a villain. And I know it's like supposed to be a play on words because he's acting as though the Justice League are the real villains, but he is telling all the humans to basically turn their back on every hero that they can.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are not good for the world. They brought so much danger to the world for years and years and years. So he's using his fortune to give, you know, any supplies that is needed to get rid of these heroes. And you see, you know, Martian Manhunter uses his telepathy. And he reaches out and he realizes that the world is legitimately scared of the Justice League now. They are taking arms and they're ready to fight. And the World Forger was like, well, I can reach out and, you know, bring in the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor. And Starman was like, well, I can bring in people from the entire multiverse. And then Wonder Woman's like, well, no, there's plenty of heroes here that we have that we can just fight with. And then Martian Manhunter is like, we need everyone. But I think the only nitpick that I have on this part of this story was the blatant part where Lex Luthor literally tells everybody in the broadcast, this is the year of the villain.
Yeah.
Very on the nose. And I know
that... Well, that's one of the things that... That's one of the things that bothered me with, like, Metal. Because I felt like Metal was just, like, a huge event just to lead into New Age of Heroes. Because there's even, like, that time, like, at the end, I think it was, like, Batman, where he even says, it's the dawn of a New Age of Heroes. And I'm like, yeah. Mother... And, like, that bothered me. Like, I was like, I hate this ending.
Like, when they do cheesy things like that, it's very... It's, like, almost cringy.
Yes.
It's just like, why do it? Like, why say it? We all see it. Why say it? Kind of thing.
Sometimes they just say it because they want people to, even though it's, the banner is literally on the outside of the comic, like a prelude. I think sometimes people just want to hear it because if they hear something, they connect like, oh, this must be the whole year the villain thing that people are talking about. So yeah. I think like sometimes they just have to throw those really cheesy, stupid lines.
And then we get a small tease as of what is happening to Lex Luthor. Because if you didn't pick up the 25-cent Year of the Villain book, you definitely need to read it now because none of that stuff is coming in other books. I thought that they were, but they legitimately treated that book like its own thing. Very, very important that you go pick that up if you want to follow the Year of the Villain events. leading into this event with Justice League and the rest of the DC Universe, as well as Leviathan. That is also a 6-issue miniseries that is starting, I believe, at the end of this month.
Yeah. So, another strong, strong comic. I gotta be honest, the second half didn't get me as excited, because once you cry in a comic book, you can't, like, follow it up and still be like, oh man, this was good. I would have to, like, read it again, but now read it while skipping the amazing stuff, because I don't think that anybody that loves Superman, or just the great comeback, because it was just a great comeback story, and just showing the, especially if you read Superman, if you were a fan of, like, the New 52 onwards, then maybe the Pa Kent stuff won't mean much, because there's no relationship there. But if you know anything about Pa Kent and what Pa and Ma Kent have meant to Clark, seeing these father-son parallels that you've been seeing going on ever since he's been in that black void, it was beautiful. It was beautifully said. And I messaged Scott, and I'm like, Scott, this is pretty amazing. And I was like, this is, like, there's very few times that I have gotten teary. Like, I've never cried, but there's very few times that I can get emotional and kind of read something where I'm fist pumping.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, like, I'll be honest, like, there's been times that I've been, like, at church, and I'm like, babe, like, if there's, like, a special service, and I'm like, babe, the Patriots are playing the Cowboys right now. And this was, like, I don't know, like, 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm like, babe, they're playing the Cowboys. And I'll be honest, I had my phone out. Like, I shouldn't say this as a youth pastor, but I'm like, no, I was watching the game, and I'm like, and I literally, Tom Brady threw an interception in the end zone, and I hit the person's leg that was next to me, because I wanted to, like, punch the seat. Like, you know, kind of like a, damn it, kind of thing. Yeah. But I hit him, and I hit him, like, in the quad, where you would give, like, someone a dead leg.
Oh, no.
That's when I realized I had to, like, turn off my phone, because I'm taking this a little too serious in a moment. But hey, I'll tell you, look, even a guy like me, sports makes me irrational. I'm a normally positive person, and I like to just live my life that way, but sports takes it out of me. So if I can be reading a comic, and I can be like this, and I'm on my iPad, and I'm reading, and I'm going like, and I'm doing one of those fist pump, and I'm like, and I'm saying a whole bunch of, like, words I shouldn't say out loud. Like, that's where I was at, and it was hell yes.
Dude, like, if I said it in my tweet, if I wasn't at work, I think I would have let out a literal yell. But I told Scott, and I told Jimenez, I thanked them for both breaking my heart and mending it as a Superman fan. This is exactly what it does. I haven't been collecting this trade. I think I will buy this one in particular, just so that way I can always go back to this moment and read it over and over and over and over.
I'm hoping that Scott Snyder's Justice League run gets one of those absolute treatments.
Oh, dude.
Where you get it kind of like the IMAX version of a comic book. Because if that's the case, I will get it.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely so, loved it. But man, I think that's it, man.
We're done, man. We can go on with our day. You get to go to work, and I'm going to drive to the comic book store.
No, today's my day off.
So, why you're going to the store. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I'm going to the comic shop. I'm actually going to, I don't think I picked, cause usually every now and again, I said, you know, I'm only going to be buying the DC event books and nothing else, online, which I have been doing. But I didn't pick up issue 25 of Justice League because it was a regular book, not an event. So I am going to my shop.
Think your wife would understand that if you cry in a comic book, you're allowed to buy it.
Yeah, I'm going to buy this issue for sure. I think I will also, because I don't think I have it in trade, I think I'm going to buy Superman Unchained. Maybe give that a read again. It's been a while since I've read that one.
It's really good. I really liked it.
But also, before we go, I wanted to go ahead and make an announcement, because I am doing this tonight as well. I finally started to get my streaming stuff up and going. I'm testing it out tonight. So if anybody enjoyed the Batman talk that me, Mark, and Jake had, we are trying to plan out that we can have something like that at least once a month or however often we can do it, but we will actually be live streaming it. So you guys can watch us live. You can ask us questions. So that will be something that is in the works. I'm figuring all of that out tonight. I'm buying an extra monitor today as well, so that way I can, you know, map things out on the actual computer to when we actually do it. So I'm really excited. You guys should be really excited, because I think it'll definitely have something really special to be involved in. So really excited for that as well.
I have to say, it's with, this is like, I gotta say this like with a heavy heart. I am a huge Walking Dead fan. Clay, do you read the Walking Dead comics?
I do, but I am a little bit behind. I'm like maybe 10 issues behind, actually.
Then I won't say anything to honor the fact that you've been reading it. But I will say, this is one of the most emotionally, it was an emotional issue because something happened that I did not expect at all to happen.
Oh, I'm going to ask you as soon as we stop recording. So,
well, I mean, it's a comic show. I mean, so if people haven't read it, I mean, I could just say it. But if you're going to ask, it depends if you want to know the answer.
Well, I was going to ask, but this is a DC show. You don't.
This is a DC.
You can't spoil a non-DC.
I'm sorry. Well, then, yeah, okay. Ask me off air. But with that being said, if you wanted to ask me about it and talk about it, because I'm going to need some, I'm going to need some encouragement. I would just reach out to me at Mark Reads Comics. I was going to say my other, but that's where you can find me on Twitter at Mark Reads Comics. Or CB_Legion, where you can, it's gonna be either myself or Clay, chatting. Yeah, I'm actually really pumped. Clay's been telling me about all the stuff that he's been doing with Fanboy Comics. He's got some really cool stuff outside of like the streaming stuff that we're planning on doing as well. But he's got some stuff with Fanboy Comics. One of them's gonna be, when are we posting that one with, Jason Inman?
I'm actually recording that tonight. We should be dropping it on the 10th. I definitely want listeners to hear it so that way they have time to pre-order his novel that is coming out. That it's talking about the soldiers that have served in the military that are actually like the comic book characters, like Captain America, John Stewart, Captain Atom, and some other people that probably I have no clue about. Because I have not verged, because I know that there was, in New 52, wasn't there a Men at War, reboot? I haven't read that one, but I'm sure it's in my venture of reading all of the New 52 books, so I'll try that one out as well. Blackhawks was another one, that had to do with military. So very interesting. My family is, a military family, so I'm really excited to get my hands on that book. I have already pre-ordered it, and I have pre-ordered one for my brother as well. And spoilers for my dad for Father's Day, if he's listening to this. But I got him one for Father's Day as well. So, really cool. But we will be dropping that on the 10th, so next Monday. And then after that, I also have a episode with a good friend from the DC Comics Squadcast, Jordan Funky. He and I talked about a really cool X-Men book with a really, really cool character, which that should be coming out in about 2 weeks.
Nice. All right, man. So yeah, we got a lot of stuff going in the world of Comic Book Legion. Also, we have our website, comicbooklegion.com. If you are interested, I'm actually been emailing, someone who's interested in contributing. So we're going to be working on with that as well. So if you are interested, just reach out to any one of our personal Twitters, or you can DM us at CB_Legion. Email us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com, and you know, we'll love to chat. I mean, we have an awesome group of guys, and we love talking everything. So if you want to be part of it, hook us up, or hit us up, not hook us up. So with that being said, Clay, we good?
Yep, I think we're good.
All right, so then we will talk to you guys next week. See ya.
All right, see you later.